knock off the Roman Empire. He would set up his kingdom on earth and rule forever. Israel would once again return to the glory it had when King David and King Solomon were kings, to the greatest extent, and the riches were pouring in from all over the world, and leaders of other nations came just to see the glory of Jerusalem and the temple. And that is what they expected. They wanted somebody to wipe out the Roman Empire and take over. And you can see that in the New Testament narrative in the Gospels. You know, there are verses where it tells you that Jesus knew that if he did not leave a certain area of that right now, that they would by force try to install him as king over Israel. He knew, being God, what they were thinking. And it just, once again, lets us know that these people wanted a king. They wanted the ease of suffering. They wanted the yoke of Roman oppression removed from their necks. However, the Old Testament also dealt with the type of Messiah who was the suffering servant. He was the one who would be silent before his accusers. He was the one who would be pierced. He was the one for whom his garments would have lots cast for them. He was the one who, by his stripes, we are healed. He would suffer and he would die at the hands of his chosen nation. That type of Messiah, while not completely misunderstood by the Jewish scholars of the first century AD, there were some who knew he was to come. But the fervor of nationalism, the fervor to be free of the Roman slavery, had made that type of Messiah all but forgotten. But Isaiah 53 is the perfect, the quintessential Old Testament verse for the suffering Messiah. And if you will allow me, we will read through it. Who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of dry ground. He has no form or comeliness, and when we see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. The Messiah becomes a normal God, a normal human being. He would eat, he would sleep, he would get tired. He would need to use a restroom. He'd have to put on his shoes and his clothes like everybody else, a normal human being. He is despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. He was despised in his own time so much that the Pharisees realized that the things he was doing no normal man could do. No normal man goes around raising the dead. No normal man goes around and restores sight to those who have been blind from birth. No normal man walks up to a demon-possessed person on the street, and that person falls down onto his knees, and a voice of legion proclaims that he is the Son of the Most High. That is not a normal God. Okay? The Pharisees knew that something abnormal was going on, that because of fear of losing their own political and religious power, they despised him, plotted to kill him, without listening to the claims that he was making, and the backup of those claims, the proof. The Father was placing the stamp of approval on Jesus' ministry by performing miracles through him that had never been heard of since the beginning of time. If they refused to acknowledge the awesome witness of miracle and word that Jesus was performing, and they rejected him and despised him more than any other man. He was hated. Was he doing anything wrong? Was he hurting anybody? No, he was healing people. Sick people were brought to him by the multitude. And he was healing them. He was making them feel better, not only physically, but spiritually. He was giving hope to a people that had no hope. And yet they still wanted to kill him because he didn't live up to their expectations for what they thought they wanted. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He stood before his accuser silent. He spoke not a word to Herod. spoke a couple words to Pontius Pilate. But you have to remember, Pontius Pilate was a Gentile dog and really had no... You have to... The interplay between Christ and Pilate is fascinating as far as I'm concerned. Here's Pilate, you know, arrogant, puffed up, typical Roman procurator. And here's Jesus, some guy that he's heard about, but, you know, just a Jew. And you have to remember that Gentiles and the Jews were dogs, and Jews, anybody else on earth, were dogs. So the Romans had a very low view of Jews. But here's one Jew that Pontius Pilate could not call his number on. I think Pontius Pilate finally ran into a Jew that he almost respected, because Jesus would not beg for his release. He would not beg for his life. He wouldn't even answer. And when he did answer him, he just told him straight up, "This is not the King of the Jews." And I think Pilate began to realize that in all his glory as a human ruler, this was one Jew that he was not going to intimidate. So Jesus stood before him, but he stood silent before Herod. They mocked him, they spit on him, they put the robe on him to mock his kingship, and he just stood silent, didn't say a word. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, but he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who will declare his integration? He was cut off from the land of the living for the transgressions of my people. He was stricken. And they made his grave with the wicked, who hung beside him on the cross. Thieves. One thief on one side, one thief on the other side. The King of the universe, sinless, the only sinless human being that ever was, with the exception of Adam. And he eventually did sin. But Jesus was the only sinless human being ever. And he hung on a cross as a common criminal, naked on a hill before all the sea, dying the most shameful death in human history. And he hung there with two thieves. His grave was made with the wicked. But with the rich at his death, he was placed in a rich man's tomb, Joseph of Arimathea. He was born. He was buried in a grave befitting at least someone of human authority, not a grave befitting the King of the universe. But with the rich at his death, because he had done no violence, there was no deceit in his mouth. Sinless, perfect, impeccable. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He has put him to grief. When you make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed, he shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He will continue. Even though he died, he will see his offspring, spiritual offspring. He will see his offspring. He will not be allowed to suffer and undergo decay. He shall see the labor of his soul and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant shall justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Thousands, 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 thousands upon millions of people have accepted Jesus as their Savior. Or Messiah, depending on their racial background. And he has borne their iniquities and has justified them all. Therefore I will divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong. Because he poured out his soul unto death, he was numbered with the transgressors, and he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. Divide a portion of the grace. What is Jesus' present ministry? He sits at the Father's right hand in the most preeminent position in the universe. The position of ultimate authority, ultimate power, King and Creator and Savior. Yet, he was numbered with the transgressors by his own people, and he died in order to bear the sin of many and redeem us all. This chapter is amazing. It just blows my mind when I read this chapter and think of Isaiah sitting here writing this, and every little tiny bit came true beyond a shadow of a doubt 1,000 years later. Almost 1,000 years later. Zechariah chapter 11, verses 12 and 13. It is prophesied that he will be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. Amazing. That's the exact amount he was betrayed for. Zechariah 13:7 says he'll be forsaken but not by his disciples. Who was the only disciple that was with Jesus in the crucifixion? The only apostle, let's put it that way. They were disciples of the apostles. John. John was the only man. The ladies were with him. But John was the only man who was with the disciples and had enough bravery to stand at the foot of the cross and watch his city die and take care of his mom from now on. Mary. Who was the only apostle that didn't die a martyr's horrible death but died of old age? John. I just think that's kind of neat. Jesus allowed him a full and rich life of horrible persecutions and sufferings, but he allowed him a life to live out to old age. Everybody else was wiped out fast. Peter and Paul were beheaded. St. Andrew was crucified on a different type of cross. Peter walked up to the cross, and God bless him. He says, I'm not worthy to suffer the same way my Messiah, my King did. They crucified him upside down. He wouldn't allow himself to be crucified right side up, which would have hurt far less. He wanted to be crucified upside down because he wasn't worthy to die the same way the Savior did. Forsaken by his disciples, they all ran away. Zechariah chapter 9:9 predicts that the Messiah, when he comes to Jerusalem the first time, will enter on a donkey. A foal, a donkey. A king riding in on a donkey. The next time he comes, he's going on a white stallion. A fitting and proper mount for a king. But the first time he came on a donkey. Isaiah 53:7, silent before accusers. Psalm 22:16 actually prophesies that he'd be crucified. That was something that was completely unheard of in the time that that psalm was written. Crucifixion was invented not too long before the Romans, long after the time of David. But Psalm 22:16 says he's been crucified. 22:18, lots would be cast for his garments. 34:20, not a bone would be broken. Very important. What would have disqualified the Passover lamb at the time that the Passover was first celebrated in Egypt? If they broke a bone, they were not to break a bone. Psalm 34:20 says that not a bone of the Messiah would be broken. What happened to Jesus on the cross? What was the typical form of a Roman making sure that the crucifixion went through fast and that the guy died? They would walk around and they would break the legs of the people hanging on the cross. Because you're hanging on a cross, you're suspended by spikes in your arms, you've got your feet crossed, you're suspended by spikes in your feet. They used to put a little block of wood under your feet so that you can stay alive longer. Romans were masters of torture. You did not die on the cross because of blood loss. Because I don't know if you've ever driven a large piece of metal through your body. You really don't bleed that much unless you tear an artery. Well, there's no arteries down here. It cauterizes itself pretty well. Not cauterizes, but it scabs over actually pretty fast. It stops bleeding pretty soon. You suffocated on the cross. You're hanging there. All your weight is on these muscles, and it gets hard to breathe in. Just do this for a while, and it's hard to breathe in. So you have to push up and take a breath, and then go back down. Just imagine the agony of pushing up on a spike that's driven through your ankles. The Romans were masters of torture. A guy can stay alive like that for 3, 4, 5 days sometimes. Pushing up, breathing, going back down. Pushing up, breathing, going back down. Jesus had been beaten all night before. He lost a significant amount of blood from the Roman cat not killed. He died pretty fast. The fact is, when the Romans came around to make sure it's a high holy day, they didn't want to mess with the Jews. You know, the Sabbath was coming on. You can't leave a guy hanging on a thing overnight on a Sabbath. It was a curse. So the Roman guard said, okay, let's bust your legs. Let's get out of here. They walked up to the first thief, broke his legs. He probably suffocated within a few minutes. Second thief broke his legs. He probably suffocated in a few minutes. Roman guard comes up to Jesus and like, this guy's already dead. Now, who would know better than a Roman soldier what a dead guy looked like? These guys were masters of their profession. But, being a good Roman soldier, he says, well, It's a lot of work to break somebody's leg and get the hammer and just smack them a couple times. It's a lot easier to take my spear and stick it in the side. Yep, he did. It did not break his bones, just as it was prophesied, just as the Passover lamb had to be on a bone with blood.
He was buried in a rich man's tomb. Psalm 16:10.
You will not allow your Holy One to undergo decay. The resurrection would occur. Isaiah 42:1-4. He would be trusted by a wide, large Gentile following. Psalm 68:18. The ascension would occur. He would ascend to heaven. And Psalm 110:1 talks about the present ministry of Jesus, which is at the Father's right hand in the ultimate position of authority. Now, the thing to use with people who seem to think that, yeah, it's a bunch of prophecies, but you know, all those prophecies were probably written about 300 AD, 400 AD by a church that was trying to build up its own authority and trying to, build a big name for itself. They come up with all these really great things that Jesus did, and they wrote it down as if it happened before. Unfortunately, in 200 BC, a group of 70 Jewish scholars, rabbis, got together and said, look, since Alexander the Great and the Hellenization of the land of Israel and the whole Holy Land there, Hellenization means the acceptance of Greek culture, a lot of people are speaking Greek. They're losing the ability to speak Hebrew. Why don't we make a Greek translation of the Bible so that they can read it with the Old Testament, which is all they had there then. Let's make a Greek translation so that everybody can read it. It's in the universal language, which was Greek. Good idea. We just happen to have copies of that 200 years before the time of Christ, where all these prophecies are in their entirety 200 years before the time of Christ. So you cannot say that these prophecies were written after the fact. We know that they were written at least 200 years, based upon evidence, before the time of Christ. The big discovery that allowed us to have that, the Dead Sea Scrolls. A lot of the stuff in the Dead Sea Scrolls are Gnostic and heretical and cultic, but there just happen to be vast portions of the Old Testament dating to 200 years before the time of Christ. Now, there are three prophecies that will prove that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. Isaiah 53, which we read, which said that he would be rejected by the Jews. When the Jewish Messiah comes, he will be rejected by the Jews. Isaiah 42:1-4 and Isaiah 52:13-15 teach that Jesus, the Messiah, will have a large Gentile following. Actually, Isaiah 53:13-15 are a little bit better for those. It's a little bit clearer in those verses. If you use the New American Standard, 42:1-4 is kind of hard to understand. You have to go to either the New King James or the King James. They use a different word. Easier to understand. But they both do teach that there's going to be a large Gentile following. Let's look at Daniel chapter 9. Amazing prophecy. Incredible. Daniel's just phenomenal with the study of prophecy. But in Daniel chapter 9, verses 24-27, it tells us something rather strange. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Okay, there are 70 weeks. Now, you have to remember, symbolic language, and this is not the first time it's used in the Bible, it's not the last time it's used in the Bible. A week refers to a period of 7 years. Just like in the book of Revelations. A times, time, and half a time. Have you read that portion of Revelation before? A times is 2 years, a time is a year, and half a time is half a year. 3.5 years, which is the end of the tribulation or the beginning of the tribulation period. It's symbolic language for time. But what it's talking about here is the end of transgressions, the end of sins, reconciliation of iniquity, everlasting righteousness, prophecy and vision are done with, and the Most Holy is anointed. That is obvious, the end of time. That is post-Armageddon, end of the world type stuff. Uh-oh.
For TV?
Yes.
Know therefore and understand that from going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem, which occurred in the time of Cyrus, until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Okay, if you work that time out, you actually come up to the date of Jesus' triumphal entry occurred. Approximately 31 and a half, 32, 33, 30, however long it was, years after his birth, because of the zero, there's no zero in the Gregorian calendar, and we don't know if he was born post-AD or pre-AD. But it actually comes up to the time when the triumphal entry occurred. The street shall be built again in the wall, even in troublesome times. And after 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off. Cut off is Old Testament Hebrew for put to death. The Messiah shall be put to death, but not for himself. He'll be put to death to save others. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. You can stop right there. Sanctuary refers to the temple. The Messiah was to be put to death before the temple was destroyed. When was the temple destroyed? AD 70, of General Vespasian, the Roman legions. So these three verses, he's to be rejected by the Jews, large Gentile following, and he had to be killed before AD 70. Can you name any other person in history that fits that bill? I can. I think it's pretty conclusive. The Old Testament teaches that Jesus was the Jewish Messiah. And the fact that Jesus himself told the Samaritan woman at the well in the New Testament, she says, you know, the Christ is going to come. He's going to tell us all things. He says, no, the one who speaketh to you is he. And he is the Messiah. Sometimes we have to spend time teaching other people that he is. I want to thank you for coming today. I hope that I've shared some information that you had not heard before and that blessed you. And it is my prayer that you will enjoy the rest of the day, and God bless you. Thank you.